gospel reading for this morning is the second in a triad of parables that Jesus tells as he concludes his public ministry just prior to his arrest. So we heard last week the first, and we'll hear the final one next week. And here we hear the center of those parables. It's fairly familiar to many of you, the parable of the talents. In my mind, an unfortunate title for it. Talents in this story are merely a measure of money, quite a big measure, and not related in any way to our individual abilities, but that has become the way to hear the parable. So I invite you to listen simply hearing mucho money where you hear talents. Let us listen for God's word. For it is as if a man going on a journey summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, each according to his ability. Then he went away. The one who had received the 5 talents went off at once and traded with them and made 5 more talents. In the same way, the one who had the 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. Then the one who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, saying, Master, you handed over to me 5 talents. See, I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. And the one with the 2 talents also came forward, saying, Master, you handed over to me 2 talents. See, I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. Then the one who had received the 1 talent came forward, saying, Master, I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. But his master replied, You wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested the money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received what was my own with interest. So take this talent from him and give it to the one with the 10 talents. For to all those who have, more will be given, and they will have in abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. For most of my life, I have thought of banks as one of the more conservative institutions around. And by conservative, I'm not speaking politically conservative. I'm talking about a more basic definition of the word, the preserving and conserving of that which exists. This sort of conservatism doesn't make changes without carefully weighing all the considerations. The default decision for this sort of conservatism is the tried and true, what has worked well in the past. This sort of conservatism does not have a great deal of use for the novel. Preferring the tried and true, it does not take unnecessary risks. And to me, banks and bankers always epitomize this sort of thinking, or at least they did, until the financial collapse of 2008. When the financial markets tumbled a few years ago, we discovered that those staid bankers had abandoned their traditional conservatism, far from being frightened of the novel, they had engaged in all sorts of creative and innovative investment schemes. There was little concern, it seemed, with some of the more exotic mortgage-based investments. People acted as if they could not fail, that profits were guaranteed to go on forever. And then, of course, everything fell apart. But if the image of bankers as cautious, prudent, careful, risk-averse sorts took a beating and really disappeared in the financial collapse of 2008, there is still another group whose cautious, prudent, conservative, careful image is fully intact, and that is the typical mainline church congregation. It's not that we don't ever do anything innovative. I mean, we after all have a sort of contemporary service here at Boulevard. But most Presbyterian churches didn't have anything to do with contemporary worship styles until they had been a big success for many years in other non-traditional type congregations. The other day I let the Presbyterian hymnal just flop open in my lap. And I flipped through the pages looking at the hymns, many more of them from the 1600s and the 1700s and the 1800s than from the 1900s, the century in which the hymnal was published. And quite a few of those that were from the 1900s were set to tunes that were written in those previous centuries. Now, this is not necessarily a criticism or even a complaint. There were some wonderful hymns on those pages as I turned them. And I suspect that our economy would be in much better shape if those bankers had displayed a little more of the conservative nature found in that hymnal, where there is a preserving of what exists, where change and novelty comes only after careful consideration. Issues of caution, care, prudence, risk-averse investing are also to be found in our gospel reading for today. A master is about to go on a long journey, and so he takes his investments and he entrusts them to the care of several of his slaves. Perhaps this spreading around of his portfolio was his idea of diversification. Now, there's a tendency to flatten parables, to lose in the process their many facets and reduce them to fables with a simple meaning. In the case of this parable, that simple meaning is very often, use your talents wisely. But this moral of the story way of handling parables very often misses much of what is going on there. For instance, in this parable, the master's calling the third slave wicked and lazy is an assessment that generally goes without much question, yet we pay little attention to the fact that the master himself does not refute at all the third slave's assertion that he is a harsh man, reaping where he did not sow. And perhaps a more helpful, illuminating facets to be found in the parable deal with the wealth entrusted to these slaves, with the huge returns managed by two of them, contrasted with the simple preserving of the principal by the last slave. And here I think, as I mentioned before, the term talent gets in the way, as does our lack of familiarity with the financial options available to people in Jesus' day. The very first people who heard this parable would have heard the term talent as nothing more than a measure of money, a lot of money. In fact, a talent was, well, the 10 talents here, a talent had to do with something about 15, 20 years worth of wages for a laborer, so we're talking a lot of money. And those first hearers would never have seen in their lifetime a local savings and loans or a bank as we know it. There were money changers, and you could invest your money with them, but there were no regulations. There were no government guarantees. And so if you wanted your money really to be safe, your only real option was to hide it. Perhaps it would be helpful if we updated a few of the ingredients in the parable. Perhaps if we changed it to a CEO of a large investment firm was getting ready to take an extended vacation, and so he called in several of his money managers and entrusted some of his portfolio to them. To one he gave $10 million, to another he gave $5 million, and to last one he gave $1 million, and then he left. And the fellow with the $10 million went out and he wheeled and he dealed and he doubled the investment, another $10 million. And the second money manager did something similar, wheeled and dealed and made another $5 million. But the third money manager, well, you know, he didn't really have all that much money to mess with. And so he put it in a very secure, interest-bearing money market fund. Or think of it another way. What would you have done if the money you were investing was your money? Would you have taken the risky investments, or would you have done what was safe and prudent? This parable has a lot of facets, so many facets that I'm not always sure where to focus my attention. On the one hand, the freedom and abandon of those first two slaves that allowed them to take the risk they had to have to double their investment has a powerful attraction to it. What was it about them that allowed them to act as they did? But the parable itself spends much of its time with that third slave, that one who did the prudent, safe thing. And since the parable focuses so much on him, I suppose I should at least think about, what is it about him that makes him the bad guy in the parable? Even though he does exactly what most prudent people in Jesus' day would have done. Master, I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I took your money and I hid it in the ground. So I was afraid. Seems to me that religion is often about fear. At least a great deal of it is about fear. Do you want to burn in hell? Or even the friendlier, do you want to be saved? Carries with it an implied sort of fear, what's going to happen to you if you're not. And denominations and churches, as we struggle and fight and battle to work out our practice and theology so that it's just right, there seems to me there's a fair amount of fear in that as well. What will happen if we get it wrong? The Bible says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, but in this parable, the fear of the master is the downfall of the third slave. By contrast, the other two slaves seem to have no fear at all. They took some pretty serious risks, and they act as though they couldn't fail. Where in your life have you thrown caution to the wind and acted as if risk did not matter? Where have you broken free from caution and from prudence and just risked it all? Perhaps you once fell in love. Well, maybe you're in love now. And you did or are doing things that would have seemed foolish and crazy before. Perhaps you got caught up in some movement, swept into it my passion for it, and acted in ways that you never would have acted before. Perhaps you are caught up in such a movement right now. Is it possible to fall in love with God? To be swept off your feet by Jesus so that you act with wild abandon, dance like no one is watching, act in ways that other people find foolish and crazy? Is it possible for the pull of Jesus to grab you, to pull you in, so that you act in ways you never knew were possible? Is that possible, Jesus? We are here, Jesus. Will you come to us? We are waiting. Will you come and set our hearts on fire? We are here, Jesus. We are waiting. Come to us. All glory to the God who comes to us in Jesus and risked it all on a cross.